ECU. Private Nation. Purple and gold family. Stand to your feet. Put your crossbones up and lean side to side. Yeah, and lean side to side. Yeah, and lean side to side. Come on. Yeah. Welcome to the island, man. It's crazy in here. A whole sea of purple and gold waving in here.
Welcome into the Pirate Preview right here on the Sports Objective, where we've been going over 3.5 years strong, over 500 episodes. And with us right now, Kyle Barber. What's up, dude?
What's going on, Dave? Over 500 episodes. Wow.
You've had a lot of episodes. You put up with me for over 3.5 years. How about that?
That's something else right there.
I know. You should get some kind of trophy, a participation medal or something. Hey, Bubba Rosenbaum, what's up, dude?
Doing well, guys. Had a little baseball practice this evening with my son, Riley, and now I'm looking forward to talking Pirate football.
No question about it. One of our friends on with us tonight. I can't believe it's already week three of the football season, and it's up next stop is Marshall, right?
Yeah, I'm very excited to have this guy back on the show from WSAZ-TV in Huntington, Keith Morehouse. Keith, how are you?
Hey, Bubba, Dave, Kyle, I'm good, man. Thank you all for having me, as always.
No question. We have a lot of fun with you. And this year, obviously, the Pirates traveling to Marshall week three. And Pirates, obviously, 0-2 with the Thundering Herd 2-0. This game is definitely going to be another big task for the Pirates. One of the things we were telling you in the green room pre-show is the offense has really, really struggled. The biggest surprise of the season, Keith, as I was telling you, the defense has played better than expected. The offense has definitely been lackluster, to be nice. And but let's get the Marshall take. How are things there in Huntington?
Well, as you guys know, it's kind of all new with the new Coach Huff era, as he replaced Doc Holliday. And he came in with a lot of fanfare. Former running backs coach for Nick Saban down in Alabama. He's also been, you know, Penn State and Vanderbilt and Mississippi State, Buffalo Bills. So he's got a pretty good resume, and came up here and basically hit the ground running, and he hasn't stopped since. He's got a little bit of that Nick Saban in him, where he's really in charge of the program, and he has ideas on how good and what Marshall can do. And so far, so good. You know, they went to Navy the first game and won handily, 49-7, and really did a nice job stopping that triple option that Navy runs and sort of, you know, makes coaches go into fits trying to stop. And then last week, they took care of North Carolina Central, but not in a dominating way. They did have 700 yards total offense, guys. So they did – I mean, they really did dominate the game. They just weren't as efficient enough as he would like. And he told us earlier in the week, he said, look, the first 2 weeks, I thought we had personnel advantages over those first two teams. I don't feel like that this week. He thinks that he sees a lot of similarities and talent. From a talent standpoint, he thinks Marshall and East Carolina are pretty even. So that's sort of where we are right now.
Hey, and Keith, very quickly, you talk about not playing up to standard, even though you had nearly 700 yards of offense in that game against North Carolina Central. One of those things he's referencing, and I don't know any of the specifics, you can elaborate more. Haven't Marshall in the first two games, or hasn't Marshall, I should say, you know, fumbled the ball, what, 10 or 11 times?
Yeah, they put it on the deck a few times and been lucky enough, I mean, after big gains, and been lucky enough to recover a couple of those against Navy. And then against North Carolina Central, two different quarterbacks, the starter Grant Wells, the backup Luke Zabam, Marshall was, you know, preparing to score and threw two interceptions right at the goal line. One was run back almost for a touchdown, and a heads-up play by a Marshall tight end saved the touchdown. But those are two, you know, potential scores. And so they've been a little sloppy ball handling, if you will, to use a basketball analogy. And I know that's something that they can't afford to do against East Carolina because, as we saw against South Carolina, the East Carolina defense can be opportunistic, and you don't want to give away chances, especially in a game like this. So, yeah, he was not happy with the way that they put the ball on the turf the first couple of games.
Yeah, hopefully that's a trend that'll continue this week. I know Coach came in and made the decision to retain your offensive coordinator, which I like. I like that. To me, that shows a lack of ego when a coach will retain people from the previous staff. Talk about that.
Yeah, Tim Kramsey was the guy. And, you know, there was a lot of, you know, how coordinators get flack all the time, no matter what. But some thought that he wasn't able to run his offense like he wanted to under the Coach Holiday regime. And of course, Coach Holiday was successful, but they didn't have that up-tempo offense. And that's what they've changed with Coach Huff. They have this drill where they want to run 100 plays a practice, whereas in a game they may run 70 or something like that. So he doesn't want them ever to gear down. So that's kind of different with the Kramsey offense. I think Kramsey likes that, but that's been new for the offense to kind of go at that pace. And so that'll be a little something different. You'll see that maybe people didn't see under the previous head coach.
Okay. Now, is that what Kramsey wants to do or – Okay.
Yeah, I think right. He does because he did that at Sam Houston State. They ran some crazy stuff and averaged 49 points a game. So I think that fits his style and philosophy. So that's what they're doing. And I think the quarterback, Grant Wells, has said he likes it. And the players seem – I think every offensive player would like that as long as you can keep up the pace, you know, from running that many plays. And then you don't put your defense on the field too often where they end up getting tired. That's sort of the good and the bad of that kind of offense.
Yeah, love running tempo. Do you guys throw a lot of wide receiver screens?
I tell you what, he has done more. He's done some running back screens, which Marshall hasn't done lately that I can even remember. They haven't shown a lot to the wide receivers, but they've got a couple of talented wideouts that have caught a lot of balls. Talik Keaton, number 9, and Corey Gamage, number 7. You'll see those guys. He'll go to them a lot. Those are his go-to guys. And then the tight end, Xavier Gaines, number 11. Also gets a lot of action. So those are sort of the three favorite targets. But I've seen him run some passes out of the backfield, which they hadn't done under Coach Holiday.
Interesting. Lots of times in a tempo spread offense like that, you see a lot of wide receiver screens. So that's interesting. You're saying they're not running that a lot.
Yeah, well, they'll run some of it. And Keaton is the guy that is sort of the guy that can get open. He also returns punts for him, so he's kind of slippery. So if you do see that, you'll see number 7. Probably the guy that gets that more often than the others.
Okay.
Keith, you mentioned COVID freshman quarterback Grant Wells. Tell us about him. He's a guy last year, had a very solid freshman year, but he did have a couple of games where I think maybe he had one where he threw 3 picks and then another one where he threw maybe 4 or 5. But all in all, a solid first year with the herd. Tell us about him and how has he looked in these first 2 ball games.
Just exactly like you said, Bobby, he had a great start last year. Remember, they started 7-0, ranked in the top 25, and then they just kind of they went downhill. And that sort of mirrored his play against Rice, which was that big upset. They lost to Rice in Huntington. Just got steamrolled 20-0, and he had 5 interceptions. And those last 3 games of the season, they weren't the same offense. He wasn't the same quarterback. And maybe he hit a freshman wall. It was also COVID. You know, you can look at a lot of different factors. But athletically, he's good. He's got a good, strong arm. The one thing he does do sometimes that he's got to get a handle on is throws into traffic a little too much to force a throw. But that's their guy. And he throws a good deep ball, too. So he's definitely has the potential to be really good for him. Decision-making and those kinds of things are, you know, and again, he's just a sophomore eligibility-wise. So they're going to ride him for sure, and he's been good at times, and sometimes he hasn't been so good, which is what you expect out of a young guy.
That's something to keep an eye on going into this matchup on Saturday night. The Pirates have given up some deep balls, so keep an eye on that, folks.
Yeah, last year, speaking of defense, giving up deep balls, last year Marshall didn't give up too many deep balls. Y'all played excellent defense. Obviously with the change, the defense coordinator comes in. So far, so good through 2 games. What is the difference on defense this year? Are you doing anything different schematically, less aggressive? What does the defense look like compared to last year?
Well, really, Kyle, they've got pretty much the same parts, except for Tavante Beckett, who was the guy that was really their star, almost made the Lions team this year. 53-man roster. He came, I think, down to the final cut. But Coach Huff has raved about his front 7, basically. Well, I mean, if you look at the whole defense, they're almost all back. He says his front 4, his front D-line, he thinks it's as good as any D-line in the group of 5. And they've got all those guys back. Jamari Edwards is one of them. Rodney Kroom's another guy. Kobe Cumberlander's a guy on the outside that – that does it. And then their linebackers have been good. Eli Neal is good. He's one of their mainstays. And then the secondary, Stephen Gilmore's back there. His brother Stephon plays in the NFL, of course. And Brandon Drayton's been back. He's a safety. Nazi Johnson also. So all those guys that played last year are back. Just a new coordinator, but they have been stingy for these first two games. Now, again, they played Navy in the triple option, and they had all summer to prepare, and they did a good job against them. And North Carolina Central, you know, they didn't really move the ball with any regularity against the defense. So this will be the first real test against, you know, really good athletes and a similar kind of you know, an offense that can, as you guys have seen before with East Carolina, can break loose. So, but defense definitely has set the tone for them, I think, early in the year.
Can you talk about special teams with your place kicker and punter? How has that been so far?
The punter's been good, and they haven't, you know, they've covered well. They did the guy who kicked last year for him, Chuchi. He's been supplanted by a 26-year-old guy who's a former Marine, and he's got a little bit of a better leg than Chuchi does. Chuchi might be a little more accurate close up, but special teams they've been good. They haven't really haven't surrendered much, and their return men are the guys I talked about: Talik Keaton, Willie Johnson, number one, is they call him Fast Willie, and he's got some speed, so he'll be back there sometimes as well. But no major miscues thus far, and they haven't, you know, broken anything yet in the punt return department. But pretty solid so far, I would say.
Yeah, that's one of the things. This matchup has been, I think, something like the Herd and the Pirates have met 15 times down through the years. East Carolina holds a 10-5 edge in the series, and essentially half the games have come down to a touchdown or less. So that's definitely an area to keep an eye on. East Carolina special teams gave up a big kickoff return last week, late in that ball game against South Carolina, and that allowed the Gamecocks to I think that was what, the tying drive, guys.
It was the go-ahead drive.
Okay.
These games have been even, the ones I've seen. You know, it's been a while since they played each other, but always an entertaining series, I think, whether it's in Greenville or Huntington. I mean, I remember watching Chris Johnson up here. I thought, man, I've never seen a guy that fast, except for Randy Moss on that turf. Those are the two fastest guys I've ever seen at Marshall Stadium, and those are pretty fast dudes.
Before we go back and talk about this Marshall offense this year, just talk about some of those games that you remember in this series, like you already starting to do. I assume you were down in Mobile in 2001 for the GMAC Bowl, which is just an unbelievable game, 38-8. East Carolina led at halftime, and then after halftime, Byron Lethwich and that offense just exploded, and East Carolina threw a couple of pick sixes, and 64-61 double OT.
Man, I still ranks as the craziest game I've ever seen in person. And you're absolutely right. It was 38-8. And I remember halftime at Mobile, and some of those Herd fans at Ladd Peebles Stadium were walking away and leaving. And I looked at my photographer and I said, if Marshall is going to get back in this thing, they're going to have a couple defensive touchdowns. I had no idea they would, but you're right. They had a couple of pick sixes and left, which threw it all over the lot that night. And David Garrard was, of course, a great quarterback for East Carolina. But, man, what a fascinating game and just a fun bowl game. I felt really sorry for Steve Logan. They kept zeroing in on him on the sidelines, and it was like he just felt it slipping away. And then Marshall missed an extra point, you know, that would have won it. And Coach Pruitt looks like he's going to shoot himself. So it was a really entertaining game. And as you mentioned, a lot of those games in that series have been great, you know, and come down to the wire, and great offenses, guys that you see later in the NFL. And, you know, that's why, you know, I'd love to see the series continue. It doesn't have to be every year. You know, who knows, maybe with all this conference realignment, those two can end up in the same league, but it's been fun, and it's always fun. I know the fan bases appreciate it. And I know that people in Huntington are fired up about the Pirates coming up this weekend.
Another game in the series that was very similar in terms of the score was that 2012 matchup in Greenville. In 2011, the Herd had won in overtime, and Huntington kept East Carolina from going to a bowl. Mm-hmm. And then in 2012, the Pirates win 65-59 to get their eighth victory of the season. And then obviously went bowling to New Orleans.
If we ever check the annals of college football history, I doubt you could find two games between two teams that were 64-61 and 65-59. Maybe it's happened, but those are two memorable games. That's a lot of points. Defense was kind of optional those days, I think.
Yeah, that 2012 game is one of my favorite games in the series by far. Like the results. But you brought it up, Keith, conference realignment. What are you hearing up in Huntington? I've heard I've heard Marshall's name mentioned for American Athletic Conference expansion, but I've also heard an interesting rumor that if that doesn't happen, either way, you guys aren't sticking around in Conference USA. That there's some talk about you guys, Southern Miss and Old Dominion, maybe deciding to move on and doing something with the Sun Belt, which in my opinion is a better conference than the Conference USA, particularly with their TV deal.
I don't think there's any question, football wise, guys, that they're a little bit ahead of Conference USA. And obviously in the old, Conference USA, when, Marshall first got into it, Memphis and SMU and East Carolina and Tulsa were all around, fans are pretty excited. But to be honest with you, there aren't a lot of natural rivalries in this series from Marshall. And do you really need to have your volleyball team go out to San Antonio or Houston to compete? I think with all this realignment, guys, whatever the SEC is doing and the Big Ten, and all these alliances, I think the Group of Five, and I'm not just talking about Conference USA and Sun Belt, even the American, I think that it would behoove a lot of those programs to look for some like-minded programs and try to get into leagues together. I think regionalization would be a better way to go. Marshall fans like East Carolina, and they do like going to Old Dominion. And, what if you're playing a Coastal Carolina that you're not having to traipse all across the country to go play in North Texas or what have you? Nothing against those programs, but it's to me, just from a financial standpoint and a fan interest standpoint and a competitive standpoint, I think that these teams need to be proactive, not sit around and wait to see what the Power Five does. But go out and find a league that maybe you feel more comfortable in, and the teams would be more comfortable with you.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think with the American, it's a little bit of a unique situation because from a television revenue standpoint, mm-hmm. we are currently receiving $7 million per school, which is substantially more than any of the other Group of Five conferences. If that mm-hmm. goes down, I can tell you what the American's trying to do. Maybe you already know. They're trying to get some Out West schools to come over to keep the television revenue up. If that doesn't mm-hmm. happen and television revenue drops, I'm with you 100%. I think I would much rather be in the same conference with Marshall and Appalachian State and, schools like that than just going after markets. And if that ends up being the American strategy, going after UAB and Georgia State and these big markets, that doesn't interest me. I'd rather play regional schools. I'd rather go to college town. To be honest, if I'm traveling, I'd rather go to Boone and Huntington than Atlanta and yep. Birmingham.
Absolutely.
Hey, guys. And
not even a consideration, in my opinion.
Yeah, because if you go, and I've been to all those places, and, you're page seven on the sport. Everybody talks about the markets. Well, that doesn't necessarily deliver TV eyeballs. That's just you're in a big city. But you watch the paper the next day, which is old school. But they're page seven of the sports page. Charlotte and San Antonio. Now UTSA's having a better year in football now. But I mean, Charlotte, great city, but they haven't necessarily fired up the league with what they've done. And so initially, when the thought was, go to these big cities, but if they don't have fans. I mean, how you all draw down in Greenville when you're playing. Well, that's as good an SEC atmosphere as you can go to, in my mind. And I'd rather go to a town. Go ahead. No, I was just going to say, I'd rather go to a town with a rabid fan base, whether it's Boone or Greenville or, name it, than to go to to go play Houston in front of 15,000 people. To me, it's a no-brainer. Go where the people care about the program, not just because it's in a big city.
There are more Appalachian State football fans in Charlotte than there are Charlotte 49er football fans.
Oh, no question.
I bet there's more Pirate fans
Oh, sure. Yeah, mm-hmm. Most likely. And if I remember correctly, Charlotte may be the biggest alumni area for Marshall, if I remember correctly.
They got a lot of alumni down there, yeah, for sure. And so, yeah, that kind of proves the point. If they, like you said, if they're going after Georgia State, nothing against Georgia State, but, you know, I look at these crowds at some of these games and say, man, there's no more interest in the program than that. I don't care what cities they're in. If you're not drawing and there's no electricity with the program or no oomph, is it really worth, you know, putting them in the league just to add a big city?
Yeah, and another thing I've always pointed out about eyeballs, to me, when you analyze eyeballs for a team, you should look at the state market, okay? And my point is, in North Carolina, NC State, UNC fans, they pay attention to what East Carolina's doing in football. If there's an East Carolina football game on, NC State and UNC fans are going to watch it. I guarantee you they're watching this play South Carolina Saturday. Just like in West Virginia. West Virginia fans pay attention to what Marshall's doing. Georgia Tech and Georgia fans, they don't even know Georgia State has a program. They're not watching them.
Right, right. You're exactly right. And it's not anything against them. It's just they're not really a threat.
There's no history. And, you know, there's no rivalry.
Yeah. Yeah, right. You got to have a little tradition and a little bit of a passion in your program, I think, to you know, to get people to be excited about, you know, like when East Carolina comes to town. The fans around here know what that series is all about. They know the history between the two programs, and they'll be fired up to come watch. So that to me is what you need to go after. This is in that first realignment when everybody was chasing these new leagues and, you know, adding cities because, yeah, oh, well, you get the Charlotte market, you get the Houston market, you get the Dallas market. Well, you really don't get the Dallas market just because you got North Texas on your schedule. You really don't. Like you mentioned, Dallas doesn't care about North Texas. And
no.
So I think the group of five, it would behoove all the schools to look around and say, man, what's the best thing we can do and be proactive instead of reactive? You know what the big schools are going to do, right? I mean, they'd love to just go off on their own and leave the group of five to themselves. But I don't think that's good for college football. And I think, you know, the more the group of five can do as a unit and you know, with some cohesion, I think the better off they'll be.
No, I'm 100% with you.
Yeah, and Keith, the very fact of when you were talking about Marshall, we have that rivalry obviously going back for many, many years. And the problem I see is, like, everybody talks about Charlotte. We're not downing the 49ers. The problem for me for Charlotte and Georgia State is their programs are relatively new. They're relatively young. Where Marshall, and you look at another school that makes, I understand money-wise, but it's got to be killing them budget-wise is your state. Speaking of rivals, West Virginia. I mean, can you imagine if West Virginia you have, you know, and you could add, obviously, with Marshall, and you've got Appalachian State, you've got East Carolina. There's so many great schools that are – football schools that have a rich tradition of football. They're not relatively new. I know that App moved up to the FBS in 2013, but they've had a football tradition for many, many years. And so I just, my thing is, I don't know about you guys, but I think we're better off when we talk about regionalization. I miss the days of when it was only a bus trip away for you know, the volleyball team and the, that thing. I think the biggest thing for me is if we're going, like Kyle said, if we're going to have it where we're not going to get those West Coast teams. And I don't know that necessarily another thing I was going to add to you earlier, Kyle, and to the discussion, I don't know how much money those West Coast teams really, really bring.
Well, I think, Dave, I think if Orozco is going after the Mountain West schools, he's gotten a commitment from ESPN that if we get them, the TV contract stays the same. Otherwise, I don't think he'd be going after him because there would be no interest. Unless Boise's going to get $7 million per year, they're absolutely no interest in them coming to the American. Why would they, come for less TV revenue and create an increased travel cost?
And we've had teams, they've actually turned us down. I mean, turned American down. I know it was back in the Big East. What was that, 2013?
Well, yeah, that was a whole different time. I mean,
I know it was, but yeah. I'm just saying that I think it's a safer bet if you have, and I'm not just saying because Keith's on. I think Marshall.
Well, all they can do, look, we can't control what Orozco's doing. I understand what he's doing, and we need to get back on track to the game. But I understand what he's doing with approaching those Mountain West schools because he's trying to keep TV revenue the same. And if he can do it, great. If he can't, then I think I'm with Keith. I think there needs to be regionalization. At that point, I think you need to get with Conference USA, get with the Sun Belt, and let's create some regional leagues.
And I've heard, Keith, by the way, I was going to ask you real quick. I'm sorry, Keith. I was going to ask you. I'm hearing there's a lot of people that are, I know money-wise, are happy. But as far as overall, I've heard a lot of people say that West Virginia is not happy in the Big 12. Do you hear that being in the same state?
Yeah, there's no question, especially with the Oklahoma-Texas thing. I mean, they got to talk about TV money. I think those schools are getting $40 million. And West Virginia's used a lot of that to upgrade their facilities, maybe with the thinking, hey, there's going to be another shift. And, no offense to any of the schools that they're going to add, UCF, Houston, SMU, Cincinnati, those are great schools, but that does not replace Texas and Oklahoma. It just doesn't. Doesn't have the same cachet. And, I think if they had their in their heart of hearts, their best wish would be somehow to be asked to go to the ACC, but the ACC says, they're not expanding. So you have to make do with what you have, but they're not happy at all about those two teams bolting. And that's not the same league that they jumped into. That's for sure.
No, but I mean, they were getting between, you said 40, Texas is getting 40. Everybody else is getting between 20 and 25 million from the big.
Yeah, right. Texas is.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, their name, obviously both those names are big, and so to lose them, and then, Oklahoma State's not happy because Oklahoma left.
Well,
their
saving grace may be, and when I say they, I mean the Big 12, it's going to be interesting to see how much TV revenue goes down. It's not going to stay at 20 to 25 million per team, but CBS losing the SEC may be the Big 12 saving grace. How much money will they be willing to offer the new Big 12? I don't think they're going to get that 20 to 25 million per team threshold again, but could they get between 15 and 20 million with CBS being in play? That could happen.
Yeah.
And also,
yeah,
I
think it's still.
Go ahead.
No, I was just thinking, I think it still remains to be seen. There might be some more movement down the line. I mean, let's be honest, the wild, wild west out there. The conference presidents and the university presidents and certainly the NCAA is not doing anything. So it's everybody's kind of looking out for their own and going off in their own direction and who can make the most money where.
Well, I'll tell you an interesting thing that I hadn't heard anybody mention. The SEC wants Texas and Oklahoma now. They don't want to wait until 2025. And they were hoping the Pac-12 would expand and they were hoping the Big Ten would expand to make it happen sooner, and it hadn't happened. Well, who's to say the SEC is not going to get a wild hair up their ass and just decide to go ahead and take Oklahoma State and West Virginia, for example, and, take four teams instead of two so they can go ahead and cause the Big 12 to dissolve, to get them fast.
Yeah, they could do that. And then there's always the thought that these big leagues don't want to expand anymore because they don't want to cut the pie anymore. But, these exit fees, we're going to see how much everybody's beholden to those. Maybe a lot of lawyers would be involved, but everybody starts to bolt, who's going to hold somebody to, hey, you left there, now you owe us. And, oh, but I jumped there. And yeah, it might be madness out there. It already is, I guess.
No question about it. We'll have to see. Is there a timeline? Have you heard as far as Marshall and Old Dominion, like what I hadn't heard that, Kyle, but it makes sense.
Oh, yeah. I would imagine it's going to be once the American does what they're going to do, Dave.
Okay.
Then I think you're going to see those Conference USA schools make a move to the Sun Belt. I really believe that's going to happen. I've read it on a lot of message boards, seen it on Twitter. I've heard James, have you heard, Keith, have you heard James Madison may be involved in that also?
I've heard that name thrown around. Yep. I've heard Coastal and obviously Coastal's already there, but I think that if you also have to think of the basketball side of things where the Sun Belt is not so good, right? If we're going to be honest. So if you can get an ODU, which has a good basketball program and Marshall could get a couple of, if it's Southern Miss and they got a great football tradition, they're struggling right now. But if you can go in a couple of good basketball and football schools and you bring them with you, it augments the league and you cut down on travel and you're not, going out west every other weekend to some far off location. And nothing wrong with out there, but I just think that's crazy. And a lot of these leagues may get, to the point where they've got 14 teams so they can have an East and West division and maybe only play that other side one time a year, regular season. and then you can meet in the championship game, but you don't have to go out there, you know, two or three times a year. Maybe that's what's going to happen.
Yeah, like you mentioned, as far as ODU is concerned in basketball, and obviously they've had their moments at times in football as well, more so at the FCS level, but they have made a bowl or two. But Old Dominion in basketball, they've been ranked in the top 25 a time or two.
Yeah, they've been good, and in the Conference USA, Western Kentucky, of course, has been good as well. And you know, Marshall went to the tournament in 18, and they've been pretty good lately too. So. You know, you got to look at the totality of your sports, especially the two revenue sports. Well, as we all know, football drives the bus. And to be honest, the Sun Belt's TV deal is so much better than Conference USA's.
I mean, I just, don't know that
just the placement of games. Yeah, yeah. Well, it happened, you know, what, 10 years ago when they got – when the ESPN and Conference USA's situation – they parted ways. It hasn't.
Yeah,
it hasn't
but
been
there's
good.
Been TV contract. There's been TV contracts redone since then, half a dozen times. And Conference USA's commissioner Judy
McLeod.
Oh God, she's horrible. I mean, I'm sorry. She is the worst.
She's almost invisible.
Yeah, she's horrible. I mean, I would imagine this has to be somewhat embarrassing to Marshall, you know, when East Carolina or whoever asked, hey, you know, the SIDs get together, and where's the game going to be televised? And you have to tell them Facebook.
And then, isn't that nuts? I mean, and the bad thing is,
Bubba, are we calling the game? I mean,
we're on Facebook
might
too,
as well.
Right now. We all four of us can do the game together.
We can be like the Manning brothers, Dave, right? Just do a little four box and call the game. And CBS Sports is producing it, so it'll be a good product, but it's on Facebook. It makes absolutely no sense at all. It really doesn't.
No, that's the thing about going back to we love Southern Miss a lot, and we love you guys and Marshall because of natural rivalries like we're talking about. And that's what hurts. It's like, I know everybody says every man for themselves, every program for themselves, but you guys are a perfect example where you deserve better than that TV contract of being on Facebook. Sorry. I mean, I know that we're outsiders, I know, but hopefully more people will say, hey, enough is enough. We've got to have a better TV deal or we're out of here.
That just doesn't make any sense, Dave. I don't know how the Sun Belt worked out the deal they have with ESPN and Conference USA couldn't. To me, that is all on the commissioner. I mean, doesn't make any sense at all. And it has caused the Sun Belt to rise and Conference USA to stay stagnant.
Yep. And you know, the one thing when Marshall was in the MAC and they were, you know, they were with ESPN then, and they, you know, that was when Marshall was gangbusters. And the only thing that they didn't do then in the MAC that they do now, which I don't like, is all those Tuesday and Wednesday games. I don't think you should take Saturdays away from your alumni and the fans who want to go to the game. So the Sun Belt, though, hasn't had to do that. They have a little bit better placement of their games. And so, yeah, for whatever reason, Conference USA is asleep at the switch on the TV situation. And the programs have – you're right. They haven't gotten better. They haven't improved. A lot of them haven't. They've just stagnated.
No, what Sun Belt did originally was take a whole they took a whole bunch of Thursday night ESPNU games, and then their Saturday games would be on ESPN3, and then over the years that evolved to now a whole bunch of weeknight ESPN and ESPN2 games on Thursday night and a whole bunch of Saturday ESPNU games. So
I don't mind Thursday games. Yeah, Thursday's fine. It's just you know the MAC they start late October and they don't none of those teams play a Saturday game.
Yeah,
they
go Tuesday, Wednesday. It's great for me and you. You know, it's great for me and you.
You got something to watch, right?
On Wednesday night, but Tuesday night, Eastern Michigan, Western Michigan. But yeah, it kills their attendance.
Yeah, it does, and I think it takes away a lot of the reason why you play college football. But you know, TV calls the shots. But I wouldn't sacrifice my season tickets and my fan base just to play, you know, on a Tuesday night in November.
Yeah, I was taking part in the discussion with some MAC fans about how to improve their attendance with the ESPN contract, and I suggested to them that they move their rivalry games to September and early October before the ESPN TV deal kicks in with midweek games. You might as well, you know, Western Michigan, Central Michigan would be better off playing in late September, early October on a Saturday. And then, you know, play Ball State if you're Central Michigan in November, a game not as many people will come to anyway.
Yeah, and you got those cold, you know, if you're going to go to Ypsilanti in November, it's cold anyway in November. So
yeah,
nobody's gonna go. So yeah, that's a good point. Play those games when it's still warm in the Midwest, and maybe you get a little better turnout.
Let's talk about the East Carolina, the game that we're focused on this week, the East Carolina Western. When it's all said and done, I think it's been guys, what's the line? It was 10 points, but what are you thinking
nine
about?
9 points, I think. Nine.
Okay. Yeah,
what do you think, it's all said and done, do the Thundering Herd win the game, Keith?
If they play, that's funny. If they play like they move the ball against Navy, I think their offense is good enough to win, and their defense has been good enough to stop people. So, yeah, I would say. Now, if they turn the ball over, if you see Marshall with four or five turnovers, I think that's problematic. I think East Carolina could win it. But since they're at home and if they can clean it up offensively, I mean, they've got a good enough defense where I think maybe they could that could be the edge.
And one of the things to keep an eye on in this matchup, and we talked a little, some of these things earlier, but I really think, East Carolina's defense did play well against South Carolina, but the Gamecocks were fairly one-dimensional, and Marshall's not that way whatsoever. So I just think they're much more like Appalachian as far as being able to beat you with the run or the pass. And with that being the case, very interested to see how the Pirate defense holds up against a more well-rounded offense.
Yeah, I mean, like you said, there aren't any complaints about the ECU defense thus far. And it's hard to gauge offenses and how Marshall compares to a South Carolina if they don't play each other and you're only three games into the season. So sometimes that's just really good defense too. So as we'll all find out Saturday night at 6 o'clock on Facebook.
Keith, that's hard to say. You made me laugh. I was going to ask you as far as the excitement of the game, we know about between the two fan bases. How has ticket sales been for this game?
I think people are pretty jacked up. I haven't heard numbers yet, but I mean, I would guess weather's going to be nice and it's East Carolina. I would expect, them to have close to 30,000 for that one, just a guess, which is a good crowd. That I know, like I said earlier, I know people are fired up about East Carolina. It's also a pretty special weekend. As you guys probably already know, a lot of East Carolina players from the 1970 team are coming up. They were the team that played the team that Marshall put on the field that day the plane crashed. So a lot of sentimental value in that. And then a lot of the players from Marshall's 71 team are coming back. That was the year after the crash when they won their first game. And it's almost exactly 50 years to the day they play ECU that they beat Xavier that day on the last play of the game to win their first home game after the crash. So there's a lot of that symmetry going on with the Young Thundering Herd and the East Carolina guys from 1970 who I was fortunate enough to talk to those guys back when I did the documentary in November. Jim Creech and Rusty Scales and Richard Peeler were so nice, and East Carolina was so welcoming. And so it'd be nice to have all them up here. And I think, again, it's two fan bases that like each other and are good to each other. So I'm looking for a really nice atmosphere on Saturday night.
Keith, I want to go back to the Marshall offense. We talked about quarterback Grant Wells. Tell us about the offensive line, also the other skill pieces. I know you lost a tremendous running back in Knox, but tell us about who does return.
Yeah, they actually kind of surprised everybody. Started the freshman named Rasheen Ali. He had four touchdowns against Navy. They were all short touchdown runs, but they like his talent. And Sheldon Evans was sort of the backup to Brendan Knox last year. Knox almost made the Cowboys team this year. So Knox graduates, he leaves early. He was a junior. And then they thought Sheldon Evans was going to, assume the job. And he plays a lot, but they started this freshman. And they also have a bigger kid, Knowledge McDaniel, who is the third stringer. So they've been able to run the ball pretty effectively. Now, they did lose a lineman that was an All-American last year, Kane Madden, transferred to Notre Dame, and he's a first-team preseason All-American. So that was a big loss on the right side of the offensive line. But they've filled it in with two new guys and they played pretty well. And so the run game has been fairly good. And, again, I told you about the receivers and the tight end. The Gaines kid is a weapon. And again, if Wells is on target, then they can be pretty dangerous. So But they protected him pretty well. And thus far, the rebuilt offensive line has done pretty well. But they haven't faced a defense like East Carolina either.
Hey, Keith, going back to, or branching out some, just around college football in these first couple of weekends, what are some things that have caught your eye?
Well, I was interested to see the Ohio State-Oregon game the other day. That kind of shocked me a little bit. Oregon looked really good. What else have I seen? Because I was on the road with Navy. I didn't see a lot of football that day until – well, I did watch Illinois and UTSA on the way back in the car. I wasn't driving. I was surprised that UTSA handled Illinois like that because Illinois had just won its opener. So I watched some of that. I watched UCLA, which I was impressed with them as they won that game that night. And other than that, and they beat LSU, which I thought was impressive. So I haven't seen a lot of the teams in the American or Conference USA except for UTSA. And I watched a little bit of the Army-Western Kentucky game. Army just did Army things to them. So I guess it's still developing, but I haven't seen anything that's I've been trying to watch every game because obviously with last year, guys, we didn't have that luxury. So I always appreciate the game, but I appreciate it more this year, to be honest with you.
As far as the AAC is concerned, some of the big matchups this weekend, Friday night you have UCF, a 6.5-point favorite at Louisville. And this weekend on Saturday, you have a number 8 Cincinnati going to face Indiana Bearcats, a 3.5-point favorite there in Bloomington. You have Tulsa going to the Horseshoe. Tough task there for them, obviously, but especially coming off that Oregon defeat, like you said. And then a couple that I think are very intriguing, you have Mississippi State going to Memphis. The over-under in that one is 64. I'd be tempted to take the over.
Take the over.
For sure.
No question. Keith, what
I think another one that he was going to mention, I don't know what happened to Bubba there, but another interesting in the American is Tulane taking on Ole Miss. Tulane's played really good football early in the year. That one's going to be very interesting to me. I wouldn't be surprised to see Tulane pull that one off.
No, Tulane played great. I did watch a little of that when I was at lunch in Annapolis, and they gave Oklahoma everything they wanted. Plus, they're bringing up that old school logo, which is really cool for Tulane.
Yep.
And Ole Miss, I did see them in the first week. I thought they were really impressive.
And they won. Yeah. So it'll be a good one.
No doubt. By the way, Keith, before we let you go, how can fans listen to your and watch your – I know you have a TV – appreciate your time tonight. I know you're getting ready for your 11 o'clock tonight, but how can people watch, work, listen to you and follow you on social media and the like?
Well, Twitter is my social media of choice. It's just at Keith Morehouse, KEITHMOREHOUSE. And we're at WSAZ.com. So we'll get some highlights and put them up Saturday night. So you'll be able to see them. And hopefully for you guys, there'll be some Pirate highlights, and for Herd fans, there'll be some Herd highlights. And I'm looking forward to it, guys. I'm going to meet up with some of the 70 East Carolina players Saturday morning and talk with them a little bit. And then they have a luncheon tomorrow for the Young Thundering Herd players from 71. So it's just a lot of good football. And again, that name East Carolina is just, it means so much up here and everybody appreciates the relationship. So I'm really looking forward to a good weekend. And I appreciate you all having me on. I love talking to you guys. Love talking sports. I wish we could do this more often because at 10 and 11, I get like, 4 minutes and they wrap me up. So we can talk as long as we want on this show. TV's a little different. But again, man, thank you guys for having me. I appreciate it. Love it, Kyle. Dave.
We need to have you back on at some point to have an interesting discussion about what do you think of the state of local sports media coverage on local television affiliates.
Oh, I'd love to do that, man. I'd love to do that. I think that's we won't get into it now, but I think that's we have to stay local, guys, because everything else is out there. If we don't do local, then what are we here for? So, yeah, I would love to do that. Anytime you all want to do it, let's jump on it.
All right, man.
All right.
Have a great night. Enjoy your cast tonight. We'll see you soon.
Thanks, guys. Thanks, Dave, Kyle, Bob. Y'all be good.
Bye-bye. Great to have Keith on. He's always very good to us and spends a lot of time with us. Appreciate him very much. And, guys, I tell you what, it's going to be a great game Saturday night. I'm looking forward to Marshall, East Carolina. And do you want to do your picks now?
Yeah, I guess so.
Well, we already know what this pick is.
I look at it, and I keep thinking all week. I keep having a feeling that we're gonna pull the upset, and I really don't have anything to base it on. Now that I hear they've struggled with turnovers, I guess maybe that's how we pull the upsets with turnovers. Yeah. But I just look at it without turnovers. I look at their D line. I look at their offense. I think if Marshall doesn't turn the ball over, I'm going to go Marshall 31, East Carolina 21. If they turn the ball over, it'll give us a chance to win the football game. But until we can score some points, until I see it, then I can't call it. So I'm going to say Marshall 31, East Carolina 21. Pending improved offense or turnovers, or maybe both. That'd be real nice.
Well, I've got mine. If you guys, you're going to be shocked. I just feel with the game being in Huntington, I'm going to go with the Thundering Herd. I think it's, I'm close to your score there, Kyle. I think it's going to be a touchdown, a little bit closer. I think it's going to be 31-24 is what I mean. That was the first thing I thought of. A touchdown of that. And look at Bubba, like through the years, right, Bubba? I mean, like you had that stat up there, 7 of the 15 games have been 7 points or less. So I'm going to go. Thank you for putting that back up for those watching. 31-24, Thundering Herd. Unfortunately, I hope I'm wrong, but that's just a gut feeling I have. And I'm going to go with the Thundering Herd, which is not great considering that makes us 0-3 on the season.
Yeah, we've had our struggles in Huntington over the years. Like you mentioned that last time that we played there, it's hard to believe it's been that long, but yeah. back in 2013, we're playing for our 10th win of the season, and to go to the conference championship game and went up there and laid an egg, got beat 59-28, I think it was. And we've heard Rick Smith and others, you know, document that dark day in Pirate history. But you know, to that team's credit, they did bounce back and win a bowl game. But yeah, I think this will be another tough day in Huntington. I really do. Obviously, I hope I'm wrong. That goes without saying. But just unless, you know, we force 3 or 4 turnovers and give our offense some short fields, I don't see it happening. And hopefully you guys are right that we'll have a chance to win the game in the fourth quarter, because right now I really don't see that happening based on what I've seen in the first two games. I really don't. I just think, yes, we're the most talented team that Marshall has played thus far, but I think I'm going to go Marshall 37, East Carolina 20.
Oh, you have
37-20.
Wow. Well,
okay. I could see it, Bubba. I really could.
No, I mean, it could. Yeah.
I hope not. I think that would be terrible, because we need something. Pirate Nation needs something to get behind, and I know a loss is a loss is a loss, and it'd be hard to get behind any loss. But boy, we lose 37-20. You gonna see a sparse crowd for Charleston Southern. You probably will anyway, unless we win.
Well, you'll see people. What'll happen? I think Kyle, you're right. As far as the stands, well, people will show up to tailgate, and that's about it. To be around the atmosphere. But as far as the people that we really need to sell tickets, you're right. The people like you and me and Bubba. We'll be there, but as far as the fans that we desperately need back, they're going to be fishing. They'll be doing a honey-do list around the house. They'll be doing everything. There's a lot of things you can be doing on a Saturday. And that's one thing that I hope that people keep in mind, is that, we are the customers, and we need to, you know, when, like I said, we've got to have a sense of urgency, and hopefully we'll see that on Saturday night.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's kind of what I alluded to before the show, Dave. You there's a lot of things you can be doing on Saturday, and if you don't start getting some W's or seeing a lot of, you know, and look, through two games, that was an Appalachian State team. This is a top 25 caliber football team. We lost by 2 scores. We lost to South Carolina by 3. So, you know, is it plausible that this week, you know, Marshall's untested? They come out, turn the ball over a bunch of times. They're just not as good as they thought they were. First-year head coach, new system on defense anyway. Come out and turn the ball over. We come out executing on offense because I do think we got some pieces there. And we pull off the upset. Yeah, it's definitely possible. But it is also possible that Bubba says what Bubba says happens and we lose by multiple scores.
And the reason I say that is because, one, I think, like I mentioned to Keith, when you look at Marshall, they're just much more well-rounded offensively, like App State was. And I know what I saw there, and really they could have definitely scored more than 33 points, could have put up in probably in the mid-40s. So that's kind of where that's coming from on that side of the ball. And then offensively, I mean, and yes, the run game is improved, but the passing game has not been very good at all. I mean, it's been atrocious against South Carolina. Against App State, it was mediocre.
Yep.
So
I'll say this.
You look at Tyler Snead, I will say this. I think if we're going to have any shot on Tyler Snead, he has, 9 receptions for 60 yards or something so far. He's going to have to probably – have close to that many catches and then more yards than he's had in the first two games combined if we're going to win.
Well, if you look at how many receptions Snead's had, CJ Johnson's got to be worse. And then you look at the other kid, my brain's not working, who has played relatively well.
Hatfield.
You look, if that's what doesn't make any sense to me, how Snead has performed so poorly, or we've done so poor getting the ball to him, and CJ hasn't done anything. Hatfield's done some things. Avery Jones hasn't done anything yet. If you can get these guys going, and there's one other thing I'll point out to both of you guys. If you go back and look at Marshall last year, and yeah, they had a good season, but if I remember correctly, without looking at their scores, when they played anybody with a defense, that quarterback struggled. Last year against App, they beat App convincingly, but I believe it was more what the defense was doing. So if you have a decent defense, their offense slowed down a lot last year. Their defense was really good last year. We'll see. I wouldn't be surprised, even though they are, you're right, Bubba, they can throw it and they can run it. I wouldn't be surprised to see our defense play pretty good against them, particularly if we could force some turnovers. My concern is, again, can we score?
Chuck chiming in very quickly, Dave, on YouTube. He's one of our loyal viewers and listeners, and he says Josiah Hatfield needs more targets. And it's been progressing that way. Obviously, he had the trick play, the jet sweep pass from Tyler Snead for 75 yards to open the South Carolina game. And he definitely, I think, had another couple catches in that game, if I'm not mistaken. And then you have, he says, Holton needs more read option plays.
Yeah.
As far as that's concerned, I agree. But I'd say – I want to get the ball in Holton's hands in a way where it's not a replay, where the defense can't just take it away by defending him and forcing him to hand the ball off to Keaton or Rajay. I'd like to see some design runs for Holton between the tackles, and you know, whether it's quarterback draws or quarterback counters off that jet sweep or what have you.
Yeah.
No question. It needs to be mixed in because we're at a point now where you feel like you can win the Charleston Southern game, but man, if you go 0-3, 1-3, it's possible to get 6-6, but it's going to be really, really, really hard. You look like you might be at 4 or 5 wins if you can somehow.
Here's the problem. You know, that's why that South Carolina game was losing. It's just so irritating. Let's say we lose to Marshall, you beat Charleston Southern. Well, look at your schedule. Tulane looking pretty stout. UCF, pretty stout. Houston, you know, I don't know how good Houston is just yet. They should be pretty good, but we play them down there, so that should be a pretty stout test. So you don't take care of business, you know. I don't want to get too far ahead of ourselves, because who knows what can happen. Somebody could lose a quarterback. Who knows? COVID's still out there, but you could easily start off 1-6, 1-5, 1-6, and you know, I do think there's a stretch there where we get South Florida and Temple at home back to back. Then you know, Memphis I think is beatable this year, and Navy definitely beatable this year. So there's a stretch where you can have a lot of winnable games in a row. Really, once you hit that South Florida game, you got to stretch until Cincinnati. We can win every one of those games. But you got to get there.
I agree with you as far as Memphis. So you take a look at Memphis. They went to Arkansas State. We'll see how good Arkansas State is. But probably mediocre. And they gave up 50 points to the Red Wolves in a 55-50 victory, which is part of the reason I said what I said earlier as far as that over against Mike Leach and Mississippi State.
Yeah, and so, you know, there's some winnable games down the road, but we got to get there. And, you know, we could dig ourselves such a big hole that it won't matter. I mean, it'll matter. Any win will matter. But in terms of getting to a bowl game.
Right.
It would be nice. It sure would be nice to find a way to win this one. And who knows, you know, you lose this one and this, you beat Charleston Southern, get some confidence. You know, who says you don't upset Tulane or Houston? I mean, you never know, but, Marshall's who's on the clock, and, we'll see what happens in Huntington Saturday night. Maybe we'll all be surprised And Bubba, are we going to meet him at the airport? You going to come down and meet him at the airport if we pull it off?
I don't know. I doubt that. But I was going to kind of go in that direction, not that far. But if we do pull the upset, then you know, you come home, take care of business like you should against Charleston Southern, and then you're suddenly 2-2 with Tulane coming to town for the conference opener, feeling a lot better about things.
Exactly. And that's why, again, I go back to that South Carolina game where, you know, if you win that, you lose to Marshall, then you come back and beat Charleston Southern, you're 2-2, and you feel pretty good going into conference play. But we'll see what happens, man. I certainly hope Saturday night we're all pleasantly surprised and saying, wow, I didn't see that coming.
No doubt about it. Speaking of Saturday night, Bubba, we've got obviously after the game, we'll be watching the game on Facebook, and then after the game, we'll be on Facebook Live, YouTube, our YouTube channel, and of course, with Twitter as well. For our Pirate Football Playback, we'll have Alan Thomas joining us, and we appreciate AT, former mayor of Greenville, join us. We'll see how, hopefully, we have, he's another person that I know believes in this team and the program and wants to see a big victory on Saturday night. It's probably going to be around like Bubba has up on the screen for those watching. Live or an archive around 10 p.m. So keep in mind that's approximate times, as we don't know about the game and all that. So it'll be great to see what happens, and hopefully we have a lot to talk about in Huntington. Very difficult place to play, as we talked about. So we'll see what happens. And Bubba, also want to mention to folks that you've done a nice job. We started on Tuesday, but we've got a very special series we're doing about the Peach Bowl.
Yeah, we are. Excellent conversation we had with strength and conditioning coach from that era. And that's obviously Jeff Connors from 91 to 2000, and also 2011 up through, I guess, technically 2019, even though it was more like 2018, that football season when Scotty Montgomery was let go. And then Coach Houston decided to bring in his own guy at strength coach and John Williams, who, oddly enough, you know, had that connection to Coach Connors from his days at UNC. But, you know, yeah, very excited about that. It's called A Peach of a Season 30 Years Later. So we've, like I said, caught up with Jeff Connors. Go back and listen to that conversation if you missed it. The conversation in total was, I think, about an hour and 15 minutes. But the segment on the Peach Bowl was, or that 91 season, I should say, was right around 35 or 40 minutes. Some excellent content there, some behind the scenes looks at that 91 team. And then we'll also be catching up, you know, Jeff Blake, Robert Jones, Luke Fisher are among those who you'll likely be hearing from, Jerry Dillon, et cetera.
It's going to be a great series. I can't wait. I can't believe that. It just shows how old I am. I was a freshman in college when that took place, so 48 years young, no doubt. Kyle, do you have anything before we go, brother?
No, man. It's just hopefully we'll all be happy Saturday night.
All right, Bubba, do you have anything before we wrap this thing up and put it to bed?
Go to Huntington and prove us wrong, Pirates.
All right, that's a put up or shut up, right? No doubt. We'll see how things go. We'll, again, be with you after the game right here on Facebook for our Pirate Playback. Until next time, you've been watching, listen to the Pirate Preview right here on the Sports Objective. Good night, everybody, and as always, go Pirates.
Yo, what's going on, y'all? This is Udon Cheek, assistant track and field coach at East Carolina University. You are plugged into the Sports Objective Podcast. If you are a fan, you are plugged into the right place. And if you're really a fan, you will share that link. My heart is purple and gold. I'm a pirate down to my soul. And I don't back down, not at all. Find out when the cannons explode. Boom!
Yeah. My heart is purple and gold. I'm a pirate. And I don't back down, not at all. Find out when the cannons explode. From the sidelines down to the post. Put it down like not even close. All out to the last whistle blow. From the flag to the soul and crossbones. Everybody stand up, get your hands up. Now the team knows that we got their back.